Welcome to the Biz Dad Podcast, where we dive into the melding of fathership and entrepreneurship with your host, the original Biz Dad himself, Adam Labar. Adam is a Christian, a former Air Force officer, a dad to three amazing kids, a coach, a real estate investor, and a business owner. On this podcast, he'll explore the unique journeys of amazing dads who are striving for greatness in both business and family. So, whether you're a dad who is an aspiring entrepreneur, a seasoned business owner, or simply a man striving to be a better dad, get ready as the Biz Dad brings you conversations to inspire, challenge, and equip you to be a better dad and entrepreneur. And now, here's Adam.
What's your favorite thing about your dad?
He's kind, he's loving, and I love him.
What does your dad do for work?
What my dad does for work is he's a real estate investor and he buys hotels.
What do you wish your dad would do more of?
Take me to Disney.
You got to go to Disney. I'm going to ask the same questions, but we'll just have it all on one sound.
Was like a different one?
No, you can say all the same things or whatever you want to say.
Do we have
What's your favorite thing about your dad?
He's my best friend.
What does your dad do for work?
A real estate investor job.
What do you wish your dad would do more of?
Flipping the pancake.
Wait, what do you wish?
Flipping the pancake and you throwing us on the beanbag.
You wish I would throw you on the beanbag more?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Biz Dad Podcast. I am super excited to talk to Maddie Aitchison, on the podcast today. When I first started this podcast, I asked a bunch of guys at GoBundance, hey, I want to talk to dads who are entrepreneurs, and Maddie's name came up probably 57 times, and I'm finally able to get to record with him. So I'm looking forward to having this conversation with the girl dad himself. Maddie, if you can, introduce yourself, tell us about your family, and then about your business, please.
Absolutely, man. Well, first off, I am excited to be here. You know, I would say probably one of the most inspiring, challenging, and things that I'm most passionate about in my life is being a dad. So, I know you share that same sentiment. Love the work that you're doing. I'm Matt Aitchison. I'm 35. I'm based out of Northern California here in Sacramento. Kind of had a little bit of a turbulent start in terms of, I told myself I wanted to be very successful and wealthy and, you know, live the life that obviously many people want to live. Mm-hmm. And my audio said one thing and my video and my actions were completely different. That led me to getting expelled from high school. It led me to getting arrested in college. And it wasn't until life really smacked me in the face. I was, you know, facing some pretty, serious consequences. And I just remember on that one phone call, which was to my pops, he just, you know, flat out said, hey, I'm not going to bail you out. But that being said, I know who you are, I know what your character is made of, and how you respond to this, you know, situation is going to tell me what your life is going to look like going forward. And the beautiful thing is, you know, the windshield is a lot bigger than the rearview mirror for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so your past doesn't have to equal your future. I really latched onto that concept. I really started to invest in personal development. I remember when I got out of jail, I was 19 years old, and I went interviewed at like 10 different places nearby where I was going to college at the time, which was in Santa Barbara, at UC Santa Barbara. And I got hired on as a cold caller making $9 an hour. And over the next 3.5 years, I ended up working for that guy, kind of as working my way up to his right hand. And he wanted me to take over his small business. We were selling insurance at the time. It was something that I definitely was not passionate about, but I was passionate about this idea of being my own boss, having this life of freedom, making a difference in other people's lives through whatever, you know, space I got into. And there was one box that I really wanted to make sure was being checked in whatever career or path I decided to pursue after college, which was being able to build wealth. And as I, you know, was going through all the different industries and interviewing with this expensive piece of paper that ultimately was, you know, only getting me $35,000-$40,000 a year opportunities, I landed on a Craigslist ad. This was back in 2010 when foreclosures were everywhere in Sacramento. Real estate mentor seeks real estate mentee. I called this guy. Long story short, I ended up working for him for a year for free. He was clipping $50,000 checks on all the houses that essentially I was project managing and flipping for him. But I learned through proximity that I could do this too, which led me to my first flip at 21. I netted $106,000 on that flip. Nice. And that really was kind of my light bulb moment of going, I can use other people's money. I can use my skill set of finding deals, building relationships, creating opportunity. And I went on to flip, you know, a couple hundred houses, built up a real estate team, realized that being in traditional real estate was not where I was passionate at, nor was it actually aligned with my kind of financial and wealth building goals. And that led me to going full time in real estate investing, which then led me into commercial real estate, where I've been buying, you know, medical plazas, retail strip centers. And then about 6 years ago, I bought my first hotel, bought my second, bought my third. I recently just exited those hotels and sold my company last year, which was a pretty exciting milestone. And obviously, the most important piece of all of this is, you know, making sure that I was being a present dad and, you know, creating a life and leading a life by example that I wanted to, you know, model for my kids, and obviously leading a marriage that I wanted to model for my kids and what a healthy relationship looked like, and also having a whole hell of a lot of fun while we do it. So we like to work hard, play hard, find as much balance or counterbalance in that as possible. But full-time real estate investor. And then obviously I have a podcast that I've been doing for 9+ years, Millionaire Mindcast, which is, you know, been as high as top 25 in the podcasting charts. We're anywhere from top 100 to 200 in terms of investing in business podcasts. And just really passionate about, you know, talking about how to, be as purposeful and intentional. And as, you know, many of the people in GoBundance say, right, being a millionaire in all areas of your life, not just in your bank account. And that's something that, you know, I try and not just be a messenger who talks about those things, but, you know, tries to authentically live that message and be the best, you know, case study and example of the things that you hear coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it goes right into being a dad as well. Like, you can't, like, most things are caught, not taught. So it doesn't matter what I'm telling my kids, they see what I'm doing. And if they don't line up, they'll call me out on it. And they know to, right? So, so you have, you are a girl dad through and through. You've got two girls, one on the way. Man, do you have female dogs at home too? Or are you?
No, dude, I had to get, you know, I was like, man, if we're having all these girls, I need at least a little bit of masculinity in the house. So, we got a little boy dog in the house, and his name is Rip from Yellowstone. So me and Rip run the roost, or at least we like to think we do until we get bossed around by the other three powerhouse ladies in our household.
So you get told what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm very intrigued by the story you said with your dad, and I'm interested to learn more. Tell me about your dad, what it was like growing up with him as your dad, and then maybe even if you have like a window into your dad's dad, kind of what it was like for him growing up. One of the reasons I often like to ask this question pretty much on every podcast is it opens up a light into who we are and why we do what we do. Oftentimes we're either run towards what we saw our parents doing or run far away from what we saw our parents doing, or something along those lines. I'd love some insight from you on kind of what it was like growing up, and tell us about your dad.
Yeah. My parents divorced when I was just around 3 years old, and both my parents were, you know, very cordial and kind and respectful to one another, you know, from, you know, what most people talk about in terms of horror stories and, you know, the kid getting caught in the middle based on, you know, two parents fighting. And, you know, really it's the kid that gets impacted. I didn't have that experience. My parents were very encouraging, very supportive. You know, they definitely held me accountable to certain standards and expectations. Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, my dad was worked in corporate America for his entire career. And convinced him actually not long ago to follow me into the world of commercial real estate. And he's been doing that as a broker for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, which has been awesome. But my dad was just always very open and communicative, very respectful, very hardworking. I come from a family of people that aren't the smartest, fastest, or strongest people, but we're just dogs. We just get in, we work, we check our ego at the door every single day, and we're consistent. And, you know, when you do things over a long period of time, my dad's a perfect example of, you know, making a very modest salary And he followed the path of invest conservatively over 30 years and looks up and all of a sudden, you know, he's got a couple million bucks in net worth. Yeah. If he would have taken more risks, I would have loved to see what he could have, you know, created.
No kidding.
But he was just one of those people. We're very risk averse. You know, I don't need a lot. We took, you know, one or two vacations a year to, you know, celebrate all of the hard work that he had created, you know, and super grateful for that. So, I definitely have my dad's, you know, one of my best friends. My mom is one of my best friends. My mom works, you know, in the other office here. So I got really fortunate in terms of winning the lottery with parents who, you know, never told me I couldn't do anything. Anytime I said I wanted to go do something, they encouraged me. They, you know, supported me emotionally, you know, spiritually, mentally, sometimes physically. And that's all I could have asked for, you know, looking back. And that definitely laid a very strong foundation for how I parent. Both my parents worked their butts off, but they were present. They were present parents, and you know, both kind of single parents in a lot of ways, with how they were, you know, leading their lives. And yet, I was never, you know, a martyr in the process of them going out and doing the things that they needed to do. Which, you know, I know not everybody has that type of fortunate situation.
Yeah, no kidding. It's, you know, you're definitely beat the statistics on that one for sure. And having two parents that were willing to keep fighting for you and cheering you on. What do you think it was between those two that kind of led to that for you? I'm sure there's going to be a person here listening who's getting divorced. Like, what is it that they can do? What is it that you saw in your parents that led them to not go down that path, that bitter path that we see most a lot of divorces end in? But they were able to actually be there and support you, and you didn't feel that extra pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was staying at one parent's house and staying at the other parent's house, right, every once in a while you'd hear a little bit of a frustration of this or that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, they didn't badmouth each other. They didn't cut each other down. When one person was dating another person, you know, they didn't talk bad about who that they were very respectful. And I think that's a reflection of our values. You know, one of our family core values is respect. And that's something that, you know, they ultimately not only set that standard of what that looked like, but they upheld it consistently over a really long period of time. And as I got older and started to learn more about, you know, certain situations or circumstances or things that happened, they did a pretty good job of, you know, keeping that in a capacity that it should have been kept in, which, you know, didn't bleed into my life, how I felt about my parents, how I felt about myself. So I feel really grateful from that perspective. And, you know, if you really do, where I think a lot of these breakdowns do happen is, you know, ego gets involved and it becomes about the person, you know, needing validation in their feelings or, you know, needing to create some type of drama or stress. When, you know, you think about a lot of people who don't do that, right? They say that they're doing something for a particular reason and here's their intention behind it. My parents' intention was to provide me with a healthy household, you know, that allowed me to have the best chance of, you know, success in my own life. And that was something that remained a priority. And I felt that. And if it, you know, if it wasn't that, I would have felt that too. So I just felt like my parents were very congruent with what they said and what they did. And that created an environment and a space where respectfully we could all, you know, coexist and work together in achieving one common goal, which was, you know, raising a productive, healthy, you know, confident young person.
So I'm going to do a slight stab here and say, okay, so they like you went to that and then you ended up in jail. Just kind of curious how those two kind of like, what was it that led you to go down the path that you did? You know, obviously there's a part of being 19 that you tend to, you know, you already know everything and you're going to go off and show your parents that you know everything and everybody else that you're cool. But you know, besides the norm, what kind of led to that path? To that wrong door being opened.
Yeah, I mean, it's that cliched statement of, you know, birds of a feather flock together. And at that time in my life, I was very engaged and active in sports. I was the one token white dude that was playing pretty high level basketball with, you know, a lot of my buddies. And I started hanging around them. And a lot of them, unfortunately, came from broken homes. They had older siblings around them that were either doing drugs or stealing or fighting or doing things that, you know, through association, we got exposed to. And, you know, when you are drinking, smoking and fighting and stealing and doing things like that, yeah. You know, you're hanging around those kind of people. I became the 10th person, you know, out of that crew of nine. And on the alternative, when I started hanging around GoBundance guys, I also became a byproduct of those conversations, those environments, those types of people. So at that time in my life, I was, you know, obviously, like you said, very egotistical. I know it all. Nothing can stop me. You know, really unaccountable person. Learning and navigating kind of my journey as a teenager, and that ultimately led me to getting expelled from high school by getting in a physical altercation. And when I got arrested in college, it was about, you know, alcohol and drugs and fighting, and ultimately those were all things that, again, were really incongruent with who I am deep down inside. But it also reflects how easy it is to get influenced and manipulated and pulled into situations if you don't have that kind of discipline or standards or boundaries for yourself. And what those results can lead you to. And it led me to a pretty dark place and time in my life. But it was also probably the best thing that ever happened to me. And I don't regret either of those things, you know, happening, because they led me, the beauty of, you know, life is there's duality to it, right? There's good and there's bad. There's, you know, there's happy, there's sad, there's extreme highs and extreme lows. And I feel that playing on both sides of a lot of coins in life, not just, you know, my personal journey of getting in trouble and leading a good life or being a good dad or being a bad dad, right? I've been able to experience, I think, a lot of those things in terms of hardship that have kind of really forced me to make decisions at forks in the road in my life and determine who I want to be and who I say I am and what I want to unlock. And those tough decisions and, you know, going to war with yourself in your own mind, often are what create the greatest growth opportunities. And so those led me down a path of growth that, you know, unlocked a lot, which has really been stepping stones to where I find myself at today.
Awesome. How did your relationship with your dad then turn out after you got out of jail? You kind of, was that like a true turning point for you and you realized, boy, I really need to change my atmosphere? Or did it take a little bit longer after that before you kind of figured that out? And then how did your relationship with your dad after that?
I'm a cold turkey guy, man. I'm a pretty extreme dude in the sense of, like, you know, if I'm having a cheat day, dude, I'm stuffing in like six cinnamon rolls and 10 donuts and, you know, right? Like I'm an extreme dude when I do something. And when I make a decision on something and I'm very convicted around it, I become obsessed with it. And so I became obsessed with course correcting my life. I was so scared of what the potential of my life was and was on the trajectory to become that I went the extreme opposite direction. So that was making some very tough decisions with cutting people out of my life, certain friends, that was certain, you know, environments that I completely removed myself from, that was certain, you know, extracurriculars that, you know, I completely eliminated from my life. And so that was, you know, that was a tough time, but it was also a really productive time for me. My life had to get a lot smaller in order for it to get bigger. And, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, standards. And I had always kind of said what my standards were, but I'd never really upheld them or lived them to the highest of my own ability. And I remember going to a personal development conference, and one of the quotes that stood out to me was, "I'm a loving person, but my standards are not." And at that point in my life, I was a people pleaser. You know, I didn't want to ruffle feathers. I didn't want to go against the grain. You know, I really wanted that acceptance. And it led me down a path of figuring out how to, one, first accept myself, and kind of going down a lot of the woo-woo spiritual, you know, type of work that often unlocks a lot of abundance and, you know, opportunity for people going forward. But at the same time, I also knew that, I needed to uphold certain standards in my life and that I didn't need to be loved by everybody and that I could still love people and create boundaries and standards for myself too. And that created a lot of room for people to get out of my world. And it also created a lot of room for new people to come in that were aligned with those standards, those values. And that affirmed as I got further down that path and the right people started coming into my world and started getting little wins and breadcrumbs along the path of success, you know, started kind of affirming those decisions and, you know, that way of living. All it did was just pour gasoline on a little spark inside me at the age of, you know, 20, 21 years old that, you know, put me on the path that really started my whole entrepreneurial journey.
That's really awesome. Yeah, I love the fact that you jumped right in and said, the heck with this, I'm done with all of that nonsense. And I would venture to guess, just based off the story, that your dad, what he said was probably a little bit of inspiration inside of you, a little bit of a catalyst for that. Do you recall, as sitting in there on that phone call with your dad, like, was that one of those, you know, dad's words were sharp as a knife and really helped make sure that you solidified that? Or did you already know that you were going to cut this cold turkey at that point?
You know, it's definitely a core memory in the sense of, I mean, I literally was in a freaking holding tank with a bunch of gangsters and, you know, drunk people and just people I did not align or associate myself being with. And yet I was one of them, and I'm freaking crying on this phone in the corner. And I just remember my dad loving me enough. And ultimately I would give my mom equal amounts of credit by the way, loving me enough to not solve my problem for me. But also loving me enough to let me know that they had my back. And that's one of my family core values. We always have each other's back no matter what. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to solve all your problems for you or I'm going to live your life for you, but know that I will always have your back. And I knew that, but I also knew that it was up to me. And so to me, it was that moment of conviction that as I looked around and said, there's no way I am one of these people. And yet I am one of these people unless I do something different with my life. And that was the scary thing for me. I was so scared of that becoming my reality, those becoming my friends, that becoming my environment, that I just went complete opposite end of the spectrum. And that was honestly, I mean, sometimes you need to face death, or you need to face the rock bottom, or you need to face the ultimate fears in order to unlock a different opportunity and trajectory in your life. And that for me was definitely one of those key moments.
Yeah. I would imagine it was. Yes. I've put quite a few people behind jail, thankfully have not been there myself, but I would imagine you, that's brother. One of those life-changing moments where you're okay, well, this is not the path I was expecting to be on. You know, this is a little bit shadier than I thought I was going to be, but, what have you taken in that? And I'm going to ask both sides, in the business world as well as a dad, because I would imagine the way that you run your business and how you father your children are both very affected by that scenario and that change of thought process. Can you kind of, if you haven't thought about it, then let's think about it for a little bit in chat, but just kind of how that particular scenario has affected how you run your businesses as well as how you father your kids?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a framework person, you know, so like I said, I've never been the fastest, smartest, or strongest, but I'm an extremely hard worker. And if you put me within certain frameworks, I can really outperform people. And so that led me to discover a lot of frameworks that I've implemented in my personal life, in my marriage, how I parent my kids, how I operate and run my businesses. So for me, I've really tried to simplify a lot of, after that, I simplified a lot of my life. And then I found certain habits, disciplines, frameworks that really allowed me, I call them my bumpers to my bowling alley of life. And I use frameworks to, you know, give me the opportunity to consistently bowl strikes and spares, at least knock pins down instead of bowling gutter balls. And so that's something that, you know, has, and I've got lots of different frameworks for, you know, obviously different topics and things, but that was a big thing that, you know, really led to the consolidation of a lot of stuff and helped me really stress test who I wanted to be with, you know, how I wanted to engage in those relationships, what environments I wanted to be in, how I wanted to engage in those, you know, arenas, what path I wanted to go down, and ultimately what people were or weren't aligned with that, what habits, disciplines, education, skills that I need to build. So that was a very large domino that set me down a path that, you know, when I look at where I'm at today, really the root in the beginning of that journey was right there in that holding tank.
with your daughters as they grow up and they get older, obviously right now 9, 6 and coming in June, probably around the time this podcast finally comes out too. But as that is going on, what kind of things are you thinking in your brain? Like, okay, well, as they get older, these are the things that, like, this is the framework I want to make sure is instilled within them so that they try to travel down the best path. Obviously, our kids are going to make their own decisions, but we want to do our best to lay the path down for them properly so that they can choose the right way to go. But what sort of frameworks are you actually implementing as a family, as a dad, and as a husband and wife team to parent your kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one, it starts with Marie and I, and you know, how we model what a healthy relationship looks like, how we prioritize ourselves and our time over the kids, to be completely honest. Like, they know their priorities, they know they're our world, and yet they don't dominate us as individuals, and they don't dominate us as a couple. Those are really, really important things. And so we consistently carve out, you know, every Saturday, they know what's going down every Saturday. They are going somewhere because we're going on date night. You know, we do our one-on-ones with the kids. We do what we call relationship recharges. That started with Marie and I, and then the kids actually asked me to start doing them with them. So I started doing my relationship recharges with my kids. You know, we go over our core values, just about every single day. When I pick the kids up, you know, I ask them to tell me one thing that they're grateful for, one thing that went great today, one thing that didn't go so well, and one thing that they did that, exemplified our core values. And it's awesome. And my kids will literally, they will police each other and police Marie and I based on our core values. If, you know, Marie and I have a little bit of a spicy conversation or, you know, an elevated discussion, you know, every once in a while, it's great. My kids will hold me accountable. Dad, are you talking with kindness and respect to Mom?
Ooh.
I mean, my girls hold me accountable, but it's the beautiful thing is that's exactly what I want. Yeah. That's exactly why we have those discussions around core values every day, why we reward them when they're in alignment with them, why we course correct, you know, behavior when they're out of alignment with them. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that I want to be second nature for my kids, is their values to be ingrained in their DNA and who they are. Obviously, they're going to incorporate in their own unique skills and, you know, special traits and characteristics. But we got to give them the foundational building blocks of who we are, what we stand for, what we believe in, what we don't believe in. We can still be respectful of people who are different from us or don't think the way we do or lead a different life, right? But this is what we stand for. And I think it's, you know, been the kind of backbone and the spine of our family has been our core values. And then obviously all the shared experiences and, you know, all the teachings that go along each and every day, you know, as we lead and live our lives is very, very important. But that's, you know, your kids are smart. Like you said, right? It's not what you tell them, it's what you show them, mm-hmm. right? They catch it. They don't necessarily listen all the time. And for me, it was one of those things that I just wanted to make sure that I was at the best of my ability, showcasing one, how to be a good husband. Like, how do you be a great partner to the individual that you say you love the most? And what does that look like? So one, I was teaching them what a strong male should look like mm-hmm. and they should expect in their relationships going forward. And then the other side of it is, you know, how am I holding them accountable to, you know, all of these things and still giving them some balance and some, you know, runway to mess up and fall on their faces and to learn these, you know, lessons on their own, but at the same time, you know, still give them sometimes the guidance and support they need to maybe expedite some of these learning lessons or maybe avoid some of them altogether.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I tell my boys all the time, my goal is to make them better men than me. And now I've had to adjust because obviously my daughter can't be a better man than me, no matter what 2024 tells us. It's not possible. But my job is to make sure that she can find a better man than me, right? So if I can represent what a good husband looks like, then she can know, oh, this is what a healthy, good marriage looks like and what it means to have a respectful husband at home and not get ruled by some terrorist in the house or by, you know, find some guy who's not willing to stand up for her, but yep. yet be there on both sides of that. How much did your wife, you and your wife, talk about all of this before you had kids, and how much of it came up because you had kids?
I was, you know, so fortunate to get involved with GoBundance at 25 years of age. So I joined GoBundance before I had a kid.
Wow. Yeah, you've been around for a little while.
And I've got a 9-year-old now. So I was around the David Osbornes and the Hybens and the Timms, you know, and a lot of the great men and leaders of GoBundance at a really young age. So I was able to think about and have some of these discussions well before we had kids. But let's be honest. I mean, you know, there's no playbook when you become a parent. And when it comes to, you know, everybody based on their own unique experiences, their own outlooks, their own goals, everybody's going to approach the situation a little bit differently. Honestly, I was approaching the situation based on the foundation that both my parents poured for me, in the sense of how they showed up as parents. But really, a lot of those conversations took place as we were somewhat crossing those bridges in a lot of ways when it came to our kids. Yep. And the beautiful thing, you know, that I'm so grateful for is my wife is, you know, just as committed to being the best parent that she possibly can, just as committed to being the best wife that she possibly can. And therefore, you know, our 1+1 does not equal 2 humans. Showcasing an example, I feel like our 1+1 equals 100. And to me, that's something that I know not everybody has. And I feel very lucky and special to have that in a partner. But we also just have a lot of open dialogue with our kids. Like, we don't really shelter our kids on a lot of stuff. You know, we try and talk to them as adults, even though they're little humans. We try and, you know, help them problem solve, but not do it for them. So I think, you know, when it came to a lot of how we're leading and living our lives, it's not necessarily saying this is our framework. We had it set in stone and we've executed on that. What I have found, and this translates into, I guess, maybe all areas that I would consider having some level of success in, is I just keep very consistent spaces of time for us to have awareness and discussion in these things. And therefore, we can make really quick pivots and course corrections, or we can double down on the things that are working really, really well. So we just have very consistent frameworks for carving out time and space to consistently work on the stuff that's important to us, to talk about the things that are important to us. And therefore, by doing that, all it does is enhance our awareness and empower us to make the next right decision based on what it is that we think we're trying to move towards as an outcome. So, you know, my answer could be different in 6 weeks, if I'm being totally honest with you. But we have our core tenets of our foundational pillars that we consistently use as kind of, again, our bumpers to our bowling lane of parenting, our bowling lane of marriage, our bowling lane of life. Mm-hmm. Those keep us from going bowling gutter balls. But I also know that, you know, every time I step up to that lane, it might be a little bit different. And I have to be willing to adjust in order to get the score that I'm trying to hit.
If you step over that foul line, you never know. You're going to slip, throw it in the other lane. So you got to be careful for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Don't step over the foul line. That's ending up in jail again. We don't need to do that, right?
None of that. Nope.
So you said that leaving yourself spaces to actually have the time to discuss those things. So what does that look like practically for you guys? Is it like on a weekly, monthly? What does that look like practically, like actually having the spaces to have those conversations as spouses and as a family?
Yeah, we talked about the relationship recharges. So Jim Shields, who's a, you know, buddy and friend, wrote an awesome book that really inspired me in a lot of ways, 18 Summers. I read that before I had my first kid. And I was blown away.
Had a head start on this stuff. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, I was just so blown away by, you know, somebody being that intentional with their kids and one-on-ones and family board meetings. So we do, like my wife and I just this last weekend just completed our one-on-one quarterly days with each of our girls independently, and then we swapped. And those are things that our kids love to do. It's a great way for us to get feedback. But in terms of like a very simple cadence, Marie and I use the relationship recharge, which I kind of took from Jim Shields' stuff and kind of made it my own a little bit. So on the relationship recharge, Marie and I do it every Sunday, and we essentially ask each other 3 questions. What did I do well this week? What could I have done better? What do you have coming up this week that I can support you in? Instead of me assuming where I crushed it as a husband, which is, you know, all the time, I'm 10 out of 10, but, she tells me, right. Where did I, you know, think I did well? She'll affirm for me where I did really well, and maybe I can do more of that going forward. Where did I not do so well? She'll affirm that for me, and that spotlights opportunity for growth. And then, you know, the last piece is hey, what's going on this week that I can really show up for you in the capacity that you need? Not the way I think I need to show up for you, but you tell me, how can I best support you? And oftentimes, you know, it's a lot less than I think I need to do.
Yeah.
And those little, so it's just creating those open lines of dialogue and communication for us to get in, do the little work under the hood of the car, right? And make sure that we're still driving in the right direction. Same thing, we just started doing it with the kids. Hey, what did dad do well this week? What did I not do so well? What do you got coming up this week that I can help you with? And those simple little questions are just an amazing framework to carve out 20, 30 minutes of time to get feedback from the people you say you're doing all of these things and showing up the best you possibly can for in the first place, right? So my thing is, I don't want to be right. I just want to win. And when I say I want to win, I want to win at being the best dad I can possibly be. I want to win at being the best husband I can possibly be. And so instead of me assuming where I'm crushing it and what other people on the outside looking in are telling me you're a great dad and you're doing this and that, I want the real raw feedback. And I, you know, I'm somebody I consider, you know, myself having, you know, I call it rhino skin. I think I have thick skin. I don't get my feelings hurt because at the end of the day, all I care about is winning. Yeah. And so if you tell me something that I can check my ego at the door and say, you know what, you're right. And that gets me that much closer to winning in that capacity with you. I want to hear every inch of feedback that you have to give me. And so I just constantly look for those, you know, spots to get that feedback in my marriage with my kids. I do it with my employees. I do it in my business, you know, and I do it with myself too. And I think those are important things that if we can carve out spaces to consistently find truth and honesty in the areas that matter most to us, we can continue to course correct, reassemble, pivot, adapt, tweak, adjust, whatever it is that you need to do to optimize yourself, the relationship, the business opportunity, whatever it may be to get that best outcome.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that asking those three questions have been something that I wrote that down probably 3 months ago, and I've yet to actually institute it. And we just recently started like family board meetings. Okay. Monthly family board meetings, as well as weekly family like board game nights, and really trying to, and just, you know, since the Vermont trip last month, I also implemented every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, as I asked my kids, what can I do to be a better dad? And my son was like, hey, you know, I work from an office, there's a glass door right there, and my kids get to see me all the time, right? And so it's always, oh, dad's always working, mom's gone for 12 hours a day at work, you know, but she's not here, so they don't see that, right?
Yeah.
But for me, they're like, no, dad, you're always working, like, you're just always sitting behind that desk. And I'm like, yeah, because you're home at doing homeschool, and you see me. But anyways, but they wanted like 30 minutes, like, can I just have 20 or 30 minutes, you know, once a day for you to just come out and play with us? Sold. Let's do it. So every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we do that. And shortly before this call, I went out and did it. We were running around chasing each other, and we're riding the four wheelers in the backyard, like for half an hour. Like, I can give up a half an hour of my day to go to give to them. And I need that recharge, you know? So what the heck?
Yeah.
But asking those questions and looking for that actual honest feedback is, I think, extremely critical to making sure that we're holding ourselves accountable and being held accountable. Oh boy, speaking of one of the kiddos.
There we go. It wouldn't be a real podcast if we didn't have some live dad game going on.
As usual.
What's up?
Oh, you need the other one, sir.
What's up, dude? How are you?
Good.
I think that you're wearing some Christmas pajamas. Didn't Santa come like a couple months ago? Or are you hoping that he's going to come visit again?
He said, are you hoping he's going to come visit again? Because you're aware that he just threw his headphone out of his ear. So
he's like, Santa's gone. Yeah. Screw this.
What do you think? Is Santa going to come back again because you're wearing Christmas pajamas?
He will never come.
He'll never come, yeah. Yeah, I was listening to a podcast, I think, yesterday in the car as I was driving somewhere. And they were talking about homeschooling, and they were like, yeah, I mean, I homeschool, so my kids are mostly in pajamas all day. And I was like, ah, thank God I'm not the only one, right?
Oh, yeah, my kids are too. They're usually in a shirt on top, and then, you know, they're running around in their underwear down below because they're on homeschool as well. Yeah, we homeschool the girls. And you know, the other thing that came to mind too, that I have found being really, really important is, you know, the calendaring aspect of, I call it our family bunker. We have multiple time blocks throughout the week that are family bunkers. And just like a bunker, right? You can hide, you can be safe, nobody can snipe you out of the bunker, distract you, pull you away from the stuff that's most important. We carve those family bunker times out in our calendar. And that's ultimately what I layered into my calendar first, and then, you know, built my business commitments and activities and personal stuff around all of that stuff. But those, I think, are, you know, those are precious moments that you get to spend with the kids.
For sure.
And the fact that you're able to work at home, build a business, and still be present with your kids and hang out with them, do a podcast with them. You know, those are things that most kids won't ever experience in their life with their, yeah, with their parent. I think it's a very special thing to spotlight, because it's possible for more people to do it now than ever. Mm-hmm. Especially through podcasts like yours that are constantly giving people tools, tips, resources, and just, you know, access to seeing that it is possible. I would love to see more parents be more proactive and engaged. And I would say and argue that I think more are now than ever, right?
Yeah. At least I hope so. And, you know, I tend to wonder sometimes, is that, do I think, because I also think that there's a lot more parents getting involved, but I also look, because of the group that we're around oftentimes, do I have a bias because of groups like GoBundance where we're like, oh yeah, of course we've got involved dads, right? You know, yeah, because that's just the type of guys we're around. Yeah. You know, because I looked at the military, you know, I told you, I think before we started recording, and the amount of divorces I saw and the amount of not involved parents. And it was just, yeah, like, you know, I always told people, like, you're going to affect your children's lives one way or another. Do you want to do it while living in the house and affecting them, you know, positively? Or do you want to do it from the other side of the world when you don't really have a choice? Either way, yeah, you're affecting their life and what their outcome is. So which one would you prefer to do? And you know, I don't know. I never feel like that question ever landed the way I was hoping it would with some of the folks, but it's like, you know, I'm hoping that after I left that it really like kicked them in the shin and was like, man, I need to fix this because
yeah,
this right here, like I can't buy this.
It's just priceless. Like, and I think that's
that.
You can't. I mean, I remember I had an opportunity a couple of years back to, you know, make a multi seven-figure opportunity. It would have taken me out of my house probably 2 weeks out of every month. Mm-hmm. And there was a quote that I shared with you earlier that I live by. There's no amount of money or success that's worth sacrificing the sanctity and success of your household. Yeah. And I truly believe that. I'm sure there will be seasons after my kids are, you know, 18, they're out of the house, they've got their own lives, that I'll go, man, I'm willing to grind and get after it again and do a yeah, lot of these things, right? That, because I know that I'm prioritizing the memories and experiences with my kids over money right now. I still am trying to find balance and, you know, hey, I want to build something. I'm passionate mm-hmm, about my business. You know, I want to create wealth and abundance in the process. But, you know, there's a lot of people who call themselves businessmen with a family. And then there are some people that call themselves a family man with a business. And I think there is a very big difference. There's a lot of people who say they're doing it for their kids. They're doing it for their wife. They're doing it for this freedom and this legacy. And yet they're estranged from their kids and they have, you know, very turbulent and broken and unhealthy marriages and they're bankrupt in all these other areas of life. And yet they've got great abundance and financial success and they're kind of empty inside. And I yeah, just knew that when I was looking at those two types of millionaires, I definitely wanted to be the one that was living just as purposefully in my bank account as I was with my wife, as I was with my kids, as I was with my health, right? In all the areas that mattered to me. And I wanted to make sure that my, you know, my audio matched my video and my, mm-hmm, you know, my calendar and my commitments and what I make my decisions. I mean, I have this sticky note sitting on my teleprompter every day that says, does the decision you are about to make align with what you value and what you see your life looking like in 5 years from now? And if it's not aligned with that, if it's not aligned with my, you know, my core values, it's not aligned with my, you know, 5-year vision, which sits on my desk every day and I read this, nice, I am not going to say yes to it. And I know a lot of people, it's easy to justify and create a narrative that, you know, allows you to make some of those decisions, which ultimately take away from your kids and take away from your marriage. And I just said, if I were to wake up in 10 or 15 years from now with all my kids out of the house and I had $10 or $20 million more to my name, but I was wishing I could give it all back to get that time with them, then forget the money and go have fun and create as much, you know, abundance and time freedom as you possibly can with your kids. While, because have you heard of Sahil Bloom? S-A-H-I-L-B-L-O-O-M.
Nope.
So he put out a like a pretty cool post in a podcast that was called like The Time Billionaire. And it was essentially taking the studies of, let me see if I can pull it up for you all. But it basically was taking the studies from like 80 years of data on these participants. And it was about essentially how your time, it was showing this graph of as your kids age, how much time you had with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend almost 80% of your time with your kids by, I think, like the age of 10. And then it really starts to decline over time. And I'm going, man, I've got, you know, a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and, you know, another baby on the way. And I'm going, I want to just get as much ROI in that time with them as I possibly can. There's nothing, if I truly say I'm aligned with my values and what's important to me, there's nothing more important than that. So the filter that I make a lot of my decisions through is it taking away from my kids? Is it taking away from my wife? Because just because the money is there and you can validate that answer, checking a box and saying yes to it, I wasn't going to do that at the sacrifice of my family.
So how do you, when it comes to your business, when you're routing through all that, right? Because there's a way to go so far in that extreme of doing nothing but making sure you're there for your family that you're not in the office able to make money, right? So how is it? How do you practically balance that? And maybe balance is a misnomer, but that thought process as you're creating your calendar, as you're executing on business decisions, as you're buying hotels and all of these other medical office buildings and various other stuff. How do you kind of go? Okay, well, I really need to make sure I'm focused on this time for these things and that time for those things. How are you working that on a practical nature?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, balance is definitely a myth in my opinion. Yeah. I just, again, through frameworks and awareness, figure out if I'm swinging too far in one direction, I need to figure out how to counterbalance and get it back, right? That being said, when I, when I travel and I leave the house, which I do, I think that is also actually very important and healthy. I don't need to be around my kids all the time. They don't need me to be around them all the time, nor should I be around them all the time. They need to go and experience discipline and failures and socialization and leadership and people challenging them and people getting them in trouble beyond just me being present. So, I think there's a lot of people who are around their kids all the time and they're actually not present and they're not actually bringing true value in the experiences and moments they have with their kids. And I know that there are people who, spend a lot less time than those individuals and they make a far greater impact. So for me, it was finding what that balance looked like. And again, it shifts in seasons based on, where the kids are at, based on where I'm at, what I have going on. Something that, consistently comes up is just making sure that if a season is going to take away potentially from my kids or my family, that I'm getting 100% buy-in from all of them. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got a big hotel project coming on that's going to require daddy to go up to Tahoe, a couple more times a week over the next 3 to 6 months. Here's the cool thing. One, I can take you girls with me. Two, we can FaceTime. And three, I'll never be gone longer than X. Does that sound good? Is that fair? What do you think about that, right? Like, I like to include my kids in these decisions. One, it's a great way for them to problem solve and figure out how to navigate different challenges or seasons that come in life. But I also think it's healthy for kids to be away from their safety nets. And I know that I'm a big safety net for my kids, and I know my wife is too. And I think that's it's a healthy thing for them to have to learn how to process people leaving and coming back. And, it's funny, when my kids were really little, they always used to say, but dad, don't leave and this and that. And I said, I'm only gone. The beautiful thing, with technology nowadays is the fact that we can get on a FaceTime is so cool. But I, one of the things that has become a staple in my house is dad's leaving. And then I always say, but what? And they always go, but you always come back. And that's just something, right, that, they understand. That's a healthy part of why I do what I do. I get to go and build awesome things that bring value to people, which actually brings value to our family, to be able to go and do all these fun things that you girls love doing, right? And now the cool part is when you're an entrepreneur and obviously your kids are homeschooled, I can involve my kids in the business. I got them doing fun things, sitting in here doing a podcast, right? Working with my mom right next door, doing paperwork. So there's a lot of, you know, cool stuff that comes with that. But that being said, you know, we try and keep the conversations consistent that allow us again to, hey, I'm going to be gone this next week. So here's where I need your support. I'm going to be doing X, Y, and Z, or hey, you're gone this next week. Like, I need you to do this, this, and this before you take. So it's just constant communication and just making sure that, you know, we're counterbalancing based on whatever the season is and what, you know, challenges or hurdles might be present in that time.
Yeah. I mean, and we're always going to have them. So you might as well figure out how to work around them, you know,
always.
It is what it is. So, did you say you homeschool your kids as well, or your kids are homeschooled as well?
My wife does.
Awesome. And I can't wait for my wife to retire next year because she's going to help take over that part of the
duty. That's a lot of work, man.
Duty. Yeah. It's a beast. Yeah.
It is a beast, but it's a worthwhile beast. Done it.
It's been very worthwhile for sure. We're actually doing a tour of an acting academy here at the end of this week just to kind of get an idea.
We got one in town here.
You know, just so I can learn a little bit more about it. And I've learned a lot.
Why did you guys decide to pull the kids out of school? What was your reason for it?
I travel a lot, or I like to travel a lot. And you know, when I traveled a lot for the military, I loved it. I loved traveling around, but I never got to bring the family. And now I'm like, well, look, I still love to travel and I'd love to bring you guys. And I would prefer not to get reported to the county for never having my kids in school. I can drag you around with me, you know, and like we did trips like up to Philadelphia and out to San Antonio and got to do like teach them about all of this stuff while on the trip, you know, and knocking stuff out and show them what the world actually is and expose them to different countries and cultures and all this thing. So, I mean, I really wanted to do that and be able to impact my kids a little bit more. Not to mention, I was looking at, you know, 45-hour school week for a third grader. And I was like, between actually being in school and homework, I'm like, when does my third grader get to be a kid? Like, I don't understand. Like you're working more than a full-time job. Like that's, it just didn't make sense to me. It wouldn't click, but you know, I think that the benefit of the acting side of the house is depending on which one you go to, of course, that gets they're a little bit more lenient on like having you take off on a vacation because they know they understand the same thing. Like your kids are going to learn a ridiculous amount just traveling with you and doing the stuff in the world. So that's kind of one of the reasons I'm looking at that. And it's somewhere something's got to give in the life. Because right now I've got so much going on that, you know, spending that much time doing homeschool is tough. But I get on a podcast that's 2 hours long while, you know, just finishing up getting homeschool done with the kids. And it's like, okay, now what? I've got to run a business in here too. When am I going to do that? You know?
We thought the same thing in the sense of, you know, all the same reasons you did. We're in California. So, you know, public schools are getting a little wild with some of the stuff they're teaching kids, which felt, misaligned with, you know, what we believe in and, not necessarily wanting to, you know, have our kids in those environments and exposed to that kind of stuff. But that being said, you know, a lot of the other reasons, like you mentioned, right, just to give them more practical skills. We felt, you know, the education system is very broken in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'm sure we could talk about that for hours, but for another podcast. But that being said, we're like, you know, if there's anybody that I want influencing, good or bad, and, you know, setting my kids up for success and investing in them, there's nobody better than us. And if we truly are in, you know, a capacity to do that, even with it being a really big time commitment, energy commitment, you know, as you know, it's you're a teacher, you know, you're a business owner. Oh yeah. You're also a teacher too. Yeah. And you're relearning curriculums and trying to teach these kids how to, you know, be productive in today's world, which is very different than what the education system is teaching people because it's transformed so drastically over the last decade, let alone two, let alone three. And we're teaching curriculums back from, you know, multiple decades ago. So it was just one of those things where I felt like, hey, you know, let's give it a shot. We're on year almost four now. Nice. And, you know, our kids are doing great and they're still socialized. They're still, you know, in other extracurricular activities, still getting leadership and discipline and coaching from other adults, you know, in other environments. They're socialized with other kids. They're in sports. They do all kinds of activities. And so we feel good about where, you know, where that has led us and our children and really gives us an opportunity to expose them to something, whether they decide to be entrepreneurs or not. Entrepreneurship has given me the ability to expose them, like you said, right, to cultures, to cities, to states, to things outside of what unfortunately most people get stuck in, which is their little box. And that's all I want to do. I want to have as many data points up on the board for my kids to look at and connect dots on and figure out what path makes the most sense for them. And instead of me driving where they need to go or what they need to think or do, we just want to expose them to as much as possible. And again, with our kind of core tenets and values and foundational pillars, give them as much freedom and latitude to navigate, you know, what we think we can expose them to beyond what, you know, a lot of the traditional frameworks do.
Yeah. I 100% am behind that same exact thought process. And it's funny, I was yesterday, my kids were watching, I don't know if you've heard of the Tuttle Twins before. But they've got books for kids to read and all the stuff.
Yeah.
So my kids were watching one of the shows and it was showing, it was like juxtaposing school in 1850 versus school now. And it was like, oh, we drove up in this car. And then they, like in the scene next to it, it was like a horse and buggy pulling up and they were getting out. And they're like, oh my goodness. And they're like, oh, I'm texting mom, letting her know I'm at school. And then there was like this little kid like doing like Morse code, like saying, hey, I'm at school, right? And then they get in the classroom and it was the same exact thing from like 1850. Here's five desks with five students with a teacher at the chalkboard teaching all the stuff, and they were like, what is, like, are you kidding me? And I was like, yeah, no joke, like that does not need to be what school needs to look like. But you know, like when you're trying to create, you know, all these little robots that do exactly what you want them to do, then that's what you put them through, is the same exact, you know, training.
100%.
I just couldn't get behind that at all. You know, I always had the kids in private school, the kids like my oldest in private school. And I was going to continue that trend. And I even put them in a classical Christian school. So they taught like Latin and, you know, kind of went down a different route than even a traditional Christian school. But it was still, there was so much that I was like, and I can't even travel the way I want to. Like, I got to say goodbye to my kids more than I want to. And I'd love to say, hey, let's go to my kids more, you know, instead of, hey, goodbye. So now it's been an absolute game changer, and I don't want to change it up. But at the same point, you know, one of the kids, my youngest, is like, man, I really want to go. Or my middle, actually, my youngest is 10 months. But he's like, I really want to go to school, and I love playing with my friends and all this stuff. And I was like, well, you got to remember you were in daycare, not school.
So
You know, it's a little different when you're sitting behind a desk the entire time, right? But we'll see how it all goes, you know?
We're kind of the same mindset of like, hey, we're not going to say we're going to do this forever. We're not going to say that we're going to do something different. We're going to just take it one step at a time, 1 year at a time. We're going to meet the kids where they're at. Because as we all know, right, a lot can change in a short period of time.
Oh, you're not wrong there, for sure. Yeah. Let's go into the business a little bit. I mean, you already mentioned that your daughters come in and kind of, you know, record podcasts with you and that sort of stuff. What kind of inclusion into the business are you already doing? What are you intending to do on including them in the business? And how do you see that kind of changing as the years go on?
Yeah, I mean, my girls, essentially, my wife's very introverted, I'm very extroverted. So, you know, usually the girls are with me. Anytime I'm going somewhere, they're going with me. So if I'm taking a business call, I'm hitting that green button on the screen of my, you know, car, and they're listening to all my business conversations. So whether I'm having a good conversation, a tough conversation, a bad conversation, I want them to be exposed and learning how I problem solve, how I communicate, how we find opportunities, how we work through challenges. So to me, exposure is a big thing. I'm just a big believer. You grow into the conversations and the environments you put yourself in. I know that from, you know, too good of experience when, you know, you're around certain conversations and certain environments, you're going to be, you know, prone to adopt those mindsets, habits, take those actions, get certain results aligned with that type of, you know, thought. Same thing on the other side. So I want my girls exposed to as much of the stuff that I know are going to be healthy and productive for them. Bringing them into the office, right? Being able to, you know, talk with people, shake their hand, look them in the eye, have a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, those are things that are really, really important to me. So my people know my kids wherever we go. Manners, respect, kindness. You know, those are all, you know, things that are kind of foundational, you know, pillars for the girls. But really, as they get older, you know, I'm not telling them what they have to do. More so, I'm giving them opportunities to opt into things that might interest them. And that's just my personal approach of kind of how we're looking at it. And I'm saying, hey, they have to do X, Y, and Z, as I know maybe some people might feel convicted that their kids need to do certain things. My thing is more so of if they're in the right environments, the right conversations, and I keep dangling out bait, I know they're going to bite at something. And, you know, those are the things that I think will ultimately, you know, help them grow and learn and expand as they, you know, navigate and get older.
For sure. Yeah. I want to do the same thing as much as I can. I catch myself too often putting my headphones in for all those phone calls just because it's easier to kind of do that. And every time I have taken the headphones out and just let them listen to it, it's always come out to be good. You know, it's not a bad thing. They get to hear so much more when they're right there next to it and hear the other side of the conversation, not just my side. Especially I've got a deep, loud voice, so I tend to come across rather aggressive. If all you're hearing is my side, you may not understand what's actually happening in the conversation too. So like I've got to give my kids the understanding of what's happening on the other side too.
But there's so many times that I didn't even think my kids were listening. Mm-hmm. And then a day or 2 days later, they'll ask me a question about, hey, what happened when you guys were talking about this? And why did she say that? Or why did you do this? So you just never know when, you know, having them be a part of those things and listening and being a fly on the wall, like kids are so smart, you know, and they soak up so much and they really are very, very aware and, you know, intelligent little human. So I want to expose them to as much of those kind of things, as long as, right, it's not dangerous, it's not super unproductive, super unhealthy. I want to expose them to as much as possible, because again, I think the more context and perspective they have on life and they see and experience those real world examples, it's only going to be a net positive for them in the long run. So I like to expose my kids to, you know, the conversations I'm having in the car and for them to see, you know, and hear what I'm doing on a daily basis, because it also gives them more, you know, context to what dad's life is like outside of our house too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me about I want to shift gears a tiny bit over to like the hotels. Like you just exited the hotels. What was it like? What was the process like? And why did you choose buying hotels? And then how did the exit process go for that? Because that's pretty exciting. So first off, congratulations on the exit, because that's really cool. But walk me through that process of what that looked like for you.
Man, I mean, I bought my first hotel on accident, if I'm being totally honest. I had an Instagram follower bring me an off-market hotel lead through a church that owned this little boutique hotel up in Tahoe that was running it into the ground. And I was like, sure, man, I can buy and flip a hotel, no problem. And obviously that was, you know, mistake number one of thinking that hotels are just like, you know, managing and operating traditional real estate assets. I mean, it is a living, breathing organism. It's a true business with inside of a real estate asset. And I learned that the hard way. That being said, it was one of the greatest, you know, experiences for me. It really forced me to lean in and build a real business, not just own and operate real estate assets, but to really run a real business. So, you know, we had 40 plus employees across three hotels, remodeled, rebranded, relaunched all of them, stabilized all the assets to force as much value into those assets in the business and the brand itself. All of them were under, you know, a parent brand. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was one of those things where I could have, when I got to the three hotels, I would have either had to have kept scaling in that market, or I could have taken the chips off of the table and used a lot of that equity to go into something bigger. And that ultimately to me was what made the most sense. It was tough, you know, to kind of close that chapter. But I'm also a big believer in not staying anywhere longer than you feel like you're meant to be there. And there's plenty of arguments and reasons for why I could have stayed in it and continued to scale in that market. And there was more upside to be captured. And at the same time, I felt compelled to, you know, mitigate some of my risk and downside. I saw a significant amount of money beyond what I had ever envisioned having for myself at the age of 35. And also, it was a good time to kind of reset the table. I'm not a big believer in timing the market, but I also know that things were softening up a little bit. You know, cap rates were expanding, certain revenues and occupancy levels were starting to plateau. And I had a good opportunity right in front of me. So I decided to exit. And, you know, I think that there's going to be some great opportunity here in the next, you know, 12 to 36 months in commercial real estate. And that's kind of what I'm gearing up for in this next tranche of opportunity is being ready, capable, and equipped to go after, you know, go after that and use a lot of the learning lessons and experiences. And, you know, and it was also too, you know, closing out some investments and going full circle on them. There's something that's empowering to adding, you know, that to your resume and to really crushing it on performance returns. And to me, I didn't want to get greedy. And so I decided to exit, and I'm excited for the next chapter.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have looked at like the boutique hotel thing, but it because it is that business inside of real estate, it's one of those that I'm like, I don't know
it's
if
brutal.
I have time to manage yet another business. Like I don't.
It's brutal. You know, man, 24/7, 365. It's a living, breathing organism. You got people inside your asset all day, every day, not just customers, but staff. So there's a lot that goes into it. Then obviously you start stacking multiple hotels, multiple properties. Mm-hmm. It can get really fun. It can get really sexy. Man, I mean, this is a big part of why was this. This rang and buzzed 24/7, 365. Jeez. And it got to a point where I felt like it was taking away from my ability to be as present as I wanted to be with my kids. And again, it came back to, is more money more important to me or being present and purposeful and, you know, connected to my kids and my family when I say I'm going to be more important. Yeah. And so it has been such a relief, you know, to almost not knowing what to do with myself sometimes that my phone's not ringing as much, but man, it's been such a beautiful, you know, and just so many peaks and valleys when you're selling a business. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so many highs and lows, so many high stress moments, so many, there's no way this is going to happen and get across the finish line moments. And yet, you know, it did. So I learned a ton in that experience. And I felt like that was a good time to close that chapter and, you know, start retooling what the next one looked like.
That's awesome. That's good stuff. Now you said a minute ago, don't stay anywhere longer than you're meant to be there. How in this scenario, it sounded like it was pretty obvious, like your phone was blowing up like crazy. You had already kind of done the rehab, the refresh. In other scenarios, and maybe even in this one, was there a time early before all of that kind of smacked you in the face? How do you kind of really know when you are not meant to be there anymore? What is the kind of what have been the clues in your life that you're like, okay, it's time for me to hang this particular venture up?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's this, it's my 5-year vision. I recalibrate my 5-year vision every single year. And I don't know. When I look at my definition of success, it's not a net worth number. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not being a billionaire. It's not how much cash flow I have coming in every single month. My definition of success, because if that really was my definition of success, I would have made a lot of different decisions. I would have said no to a lot of certain things. I would have just stayed in my lane and done something for 30 years and let those results compound. And that probably would have equated to some great financial success and abundance. But when I really think about my own definition of success, and I know it's different for everybody, mine is I want to get to my deathbed. And I want to, if I'm, you know, metaphorically watched a TV that replayed my entire life, I want to look at that video and I want to get to the end when the credits are playing and go, damn, that was a hell of a ride. Mm-hmm. And that is my definition of success. And so the second I feel like something is no longer aligned with my 5-year vision or aligned with that definition of success, I ruthlessly cut it. Mm. I mean, it's now, of course, I do it with integrity. I do it ethically, right? I make sure that I, you know, I'm not burning bridges. My reputation is extremely important to me. I respect and honor, you know, every person I do business with or even come in contact with. That being said, there is a level of what I call strategic selfishness that I know that so many people make decisions based on what other people say or think or historically or socially say you should or shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not one of those people. I've decided through my personal development work, you would ask the 19-year-old me, I would say that's me. The person that I've become on this journey of personal development has said, I need to strategically be selfish and go after unlocking my own goals and dreams and not do it the way I think somebody tells me I need to do it. Because there's so many, you could go on, you know, Instagram or TikTok or any of these, you know, social platforms right now and hear a million things that says, don't do all these extra things, don't get distracted, right? Go a mile deep and an inch wide. And there's been a lot of things that I've done that are literally the complete opposite of that. And they've led me to where I'm at today. And I have, in my own definition of success, unlocked a lot of richness and wealth in terms of happiness and fulfillment and also some financial abundance along the way that I probably wouldn't have if I would have just stayed doing the same little thing because I felt like I had to keep doing it because I was already here. And for me, again, I just didn't want to live a life of any regrets. And so I have been somebody that is very open and adaptive and willing to change and pivot and to embark on new journeys. And that's been something that I think has, you know, tied into a lot of the decisions I've made in my business career.
So when you're doing that 5-year vision, do you sit down with your wife? Is that written with your wife or is that specifically for business stuff? And then the second layer to that, the whole family is part of the, okay. And then does that mean that when you are feeling like maybe you are personally feeling like, or one of your family members are feeling like, hey, I think this is time for you to hang that venture up, or you're saying, hey, I think it's time for me to hang this venture up. Is that something you guys discuss on one of your meetings where you sit down and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling and this is what I'm thinking about this?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's ideally hasn't included the kids at all. Even though, you know, it was, hey, how do you feel about dad selling the hotels? Because they would go up to the hotels with me and we had lots of memories of, you know, fixing up the hotel and the family being up there with me, of us just going up there for 4th of July and just having fun with family and friends and, you know, having all kinds of cool experiences. So it was, you know, they were involved in some capacity, but the real decision was just around, you know, me and my wife and the Marie, she trusts and gives me full autonomy to make decisions. And yet at the same time, you know, those are big life decisions. And anytime they, you know, fall into that category, she's always got, you know, equal say. And I relish and want her input because she's very smart and she's, you know, kind of the yin to my yang. So she really does identify a lot of blind spots and things that I don't think about and consider. I move quick and fast and sometimes recklessly. And she finds a way to, again, she's one of my bowling lane bumping, you know, bumpers that keeps me in line in a lot of capacities that I need to be kept in line. So they were all, you know, discussions that we discussed and said, hey, I'm thinking about this. And before, you know, anything was really put in motion, those are collective decisions. Because again, this 5-year vision is not Matt's 5-year vision. This is our family 5-year vision. This is what we are working, you know, collectively together to create. And she is just as important in that vision coming to fruition as I am on my side of things.
That was something that recently I started coming to understanding of. It's like, there's no way, like I'm doing all the stuff for my business, creating visions, creating, you know, core values. And why am I not like doing this for my family? And it's something I've said since really like beginning in GoBundance, was like each of our kids are kind of like our own little businesses and we're the CEO of the business. And my goal is by the time they're 18 is I can just become a board of advisors and I don't have to be the CEO anymore. You run your own daggone business. I'm done. I'm done running that business. I retire from that one. And sit on the board of advisors, but yet it never clicked in my brain. Like, hey, if you want to run this thing like a business, right? You run this family, you know, if you're running your business to make sure you're getting the best out of it and the most efficiency and making sure that you're getting the best ROI as you can, why are you not doing the same sort of stuff with your family? So like this year, we just started, like we've been talking about core values, but never really put them down. So we put them down on paper. I'm literally getting ready to send it to FedEx to get it printed off so I can have it hanging up in the house and be able to refer to it every day. And like, it's something that, I mean, I've got my business core values right here on my whiteboard in front of me. It's like, why don't I have my family core values? Like, what the heck is going on? You know? And so I love that you're doing that. What other practical tips do you have? And you were about to say something, so go ahead and say whatever that was. And then
No, I was just going to say, one, I love that because I think it's, you know, such a cool perspective and way to reflect on how you're showing up and leading your family. David Osborne said this to me one time, and it makes me think of asking the same question in the capacity that you just noted on. He said, if I were to come into your business and follow you around as the CEO of your company, would I promote you, demote you, or fire you? And it got me thinking in terms of self-assessment. I think the same thing in the context of what you just said as being the CEO of your family, of your household, as a husband, as a father. If somebody else were to come in and follow you around on a daily or weekly basis and all the things that you say versus what's actually going on, if they were to follow you around, would you be promoted, demoted, or fired? And if you're getting demoted or fired, there might be some self-reflection and some assessment on maybe where you can step up and lead at a much higher level. Because if that is naturally what your answer is, then, you know, I think there's some honest opportunity for growth there. I can honestly say, and I say this as humbly as I possibly can, I'd get promoted. I'm killing it as a dad. I'm really killing it as a husband. And a lot of people go, man, like that must be really hard. I think what I have found is when you want to be great at something and you're willing to put in the work, you'll be great at it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be so great at those two things more than I'm willing to be mediocre that I just find a way to consistently show up as that. And that's not just to say like I'm better than anybody. That's just in my capacity and what I measure myself up against as a being a successful, present, purposeful, connected, caring, loving, kind dad or husband. I am consistently showing up as that. And I've got ways that I score and reflect and obviously, you know, those frameworks that we talked about that give me the ability to have a personal scorecard and also right, a peer scorecard, because it's not always good to grade your own homework. You got to have somebody else grading you as well. And so those are those feedback frameworks that keep me honest with myself.
Yeah, I'd love to figure out a way, because I think I would get promoted as a dad too. Like I think I'm killing it over here.
Yeah,
I love that. Not every day. I still suck.
Me too.
We all fall down and skin our knee once in a while, but
no doubt.
But I absolutely love being a dad. And if I could figure out a way how to make money just being a dad, dude, I would totally do that. Like if I could, if I could figure that out, because I love
it. I told my wife, man, I'm like, babe, can you, because my wife's an author too. I'm like, can you just hurry up and like just become a New York Times bestselling author and just retire me so I can be a stay-at-home dad? Because I'll be a good stay-at-home dad. Trust me.
Yeah, I think you're probably getting close, right? So to being able to retire yourself by the sounds of things. So, you know, we'll keep doing what you're doing. Enjoy that time. You know, enjoy those 18 summers that you have. Seem to go away way too quickly. You know, you and I are both with our oldest only have 9 more of those left, you know?
It's crazy.
And my kids started school a little early, so I've got like 8 of those left instead of 9. So I'm like, man, this is no bueno. Like, I'm just going to hold them. Hey, I'm the teacher. I can just hold them back.
There you go.
I just hold them back at your shoe day. Problem Sorry, solved. Bud. You didn't make it. You didn't make it, bud. Sorry. You're stuck staying here with daddy. But yeah, that's awesome. So what other business ventures are you trying to get into this year? And then what kind of conversations do you have with your wife? Obviously, you know, going back to the 5-year vision, I get that, but what kind of practical conversations do you guys go through when you're saying, hey, this is what I'm trying to get into this year. I just sold these properties. I think that this is what's going to be going on in commercial. How do you guys have the conversations to make that happen? Like, sitting down, you know, knee-to-knee to have those chats.
She has zero interest in knowing anything that I do in business.
Oh, all right. Well, that's easy then. All right.
Yeah. Next question. I mean, it's really my wife does not, if she wanted to be engaged, I would let her be as involved in the business as she wanted to be. Mm-hmm. She has zero desire. It's not a part. It's not her natural personality profile. And honestly, my wife has found her lane of where she truly does have a superpower, which is a writer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that capacity, obviously before any big decisions are made, you know, I let her know, but my wife is, you know, she's been with me when I didn't have a pot to piss in, and she's been with me when, you know, we have done pretty well for ourselves. So, she's, you know, I've built up and earned that trust over time, and she knows, you know, what kind of our swan effect, our swan number is sleep. What is the number that we need to have stocked away for her to sleep well at night?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got kind of those contingency safety nets baked into, you know, a lot of our stuff. So that way anything above and beyond that or any of the decisions that I'm making, you know, obviously I operate with integrity ethically. I'm not going to, you know, put myself or our family in risk, of losing anything and everything. So from that perspective, she's really disengaged on that front. It's more so of her showing up for me emotionally and, physically that, I think continues to keep our marriage and the necessary discussions on how to best serve one another in the respective lanes that we're, driving in every day. Those are the things that we consistently do very well and prioritize to make sure that those conversations, one of my, favorite quotes from a book that Susan Scott wrote called Fierce Conversations is the conversation that you are or are not having is what the relationship is. And so for us, we just consistently try and find ways to make sure that we're having communication and that whether it's good, bad, indifferent, spicy, whatever it may be, that, those are happening at a frequency that allows us to stay on the same page and course correct when needed or to, keep doing more of what we're already doing. So it's just communication for us.
Awesome. I'll say that I've had probably four or five different guys in the last like 2 weeks that I've been chatting with about setting these family goals and all these things. And they've been trying to figure out how do they get their wife on board with doing some of these things because they're just not on board. Now you have had the benefit, I think, of being in GoBundance for the last 10 years, which has really kind of helped, and your wife seeing that through this entire time. So what was the process like to kind of, because you're saying she's not interested now in like the business side of the house, but what was the process like at the beginning to try to get her involved in like creating these family core values and all this stuff? Was that something you just took the lead and made sure that it was happening regardless? Or was that something she was like, dude, I'm totally on board with this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, it was a lot of it was, I'm just going to, I'm going to take the lead and I'm going to drag you along with me. And over time, I'm just, I tried to get my wife to be as passionate and as enthusiastic about a lot of these things as I did, right? Coming back from these events and like, babe, we got to do this. We got to do that. Da, da, da. When you do something consistently over an extended period of time and you let the results speak for themselves, it's really hard to deny or even argue against it. Yeah. And so I've just done enough of what I said I was going to do now that she trusts in the results. And therefore, over time, I've stripped away some of that resistance to even for her not being a natural personality profile of wanting to share these things or wanting to go and build this or wanting to go and do this thing. Like, it's just kind of over time desensitized her to some of her own fears or apprehensions or resistance to these things because I have kept her in proximity to what I've been doing. And the other part of it is, I give her DNA in this. It's not me, top down dictating what this vision looks like or what these core values are. I am good at getting the ball rolling and, doing, let's say, 80% of the heavy lifting and letting her come in on the tail end and saying, what do you think about this? Should we change that? What am I missing here? I mean, when I read her my vision, she was like, this is amazing. Like, this is everything we've been talking about. And I'm like, yeah, well, I just put it into something tangible that we can emotionally wrap our heads around and get excited about, right? And then every year now she's like more interested in giving input in the five-year vision, right? With the core values. It was one of those things where now all of a sudden she's talking to the kids about why they were out of alignment with their core values. So I think for, as a leader or patriarch of our family, it doesn't, just like she takes the lead in a lot of things that I naturally wouldn't take the lead in, and she does the 80%, I do the 20%. I think it's important for us to lean in and lead from the front and where you feel called to lead. And I felt called to lead in a lot of these areas. And therefore I didn't need anybody's permission to go and lead and to do that work. And if she wanted to be involved in it, great. If she didn't, I was still going to find a way to incorporate these in a healthy and respective way. And again, because we have this aligned vision and aligned values, and I've learned a lot of these things about my wife over time, I knew that, by me doing these things, I wasn't going to meet an insane amount of resistance. But man, I can tell you this much, when you hear that quote of like, love one woman, be with one woman, that's one of the things that makes, for the most successful, happy, fulfilled people on planet Earth. I totally agree with that. And, I've seen a lot of people that are constantly, I always think about like when, economists say, don't fight the Fed. I'm like, don't. don't fight your wife, because that is a really hard battle to win in the long term. And for a long time, I was fighting against my wife's apprehension to buy into all the things that I was doing. And I was trying to change her, and I was trying to manipulate her to believing and seeing all the things that I believed and saw. And it was just the wrong approach. I was fighting against the grain in a way that the best way to change somebody is just to go to model it and be the best example of it. And if it really is aligned with the outcomes that they want or what they believe in, over time, they're going to start naturally just kind of coming to that side a little bit more. And so I've just kind of, that's been my subscription for how personal development gets kind of implanted into our family. And because it is now my brand and what I eat, sleep, breathe, and how I live my life, in proximity to that person, she's also become more of that herself, even though that wasn't, you know, naturally her way of going about things. So I really feel for the people whose partners, whose spouses, you know, aren't, either open or, you know, engaged in that kind of stuff. But the worst thing you can do is try and force them to change. Yeah. The best thing you can do is go out and just lead from, you know, the front and showcase what the things you're trying to get that person to do can do by you being the best case study and scenario of what that actually looks like when implemented at the highest level.
Man, that's awesome. That sounds like a great spot to wrap that up. And I think that is a phenomenal way to end it. But Matt, thank you so very much for jumping on. It was an absolute pleasure to chat with you, get to know you a little bit more. I mean, I could sit here and talk. You said a few things there in the end that I was like, I could totally dig into that for another hour.
We'll have to do a round two or something.
Man, oh man, ridiculous. But thank you very much for jumping on. I appreciate it. If somebody wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you, listen to your podcasts, all of the above?
Yeah. At Official Mattier is basically my social handle on all platforms. Millionaire Mindcast is obviously on every podcasting platform. Or you can head over to the Wise Investor Collective or MattAitchison.com. Those are two easy ways to, you know, reach out, shoot me an email, say what up. But I always answer my DMs and, you know, love connecting with people. Anybody that's heard me on a podcast, I love hearing any takeaways or something that resonated with you or shared values, whatever it may be. But yeah, reach out, say what up. And I'm always active and available on social.
Awesome. Well, we'll have all that in the show notes. But again, thank you so much, Matt, for jumping on. I look forward to actually being able to meet you in person, because that is yet to happen.
Yes, sir.
Positive we've been in the same room multiple times. I just haven't been able to shake hands, but looking forward to it. But thank you, everybody, for listening. Please like, subscribe, do all those things you're supposed to do, and definitely listen to Matty A over on his podcast and reach out to him. Thank you again, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Matt, for coming on. And we'll see everybody on the next one.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you so much for listening to the Biz Dad Podcast. We hope you found some value in your time here with us, and we look forward to bringing you the next episode. If you've enjoyed today's show, please subscribe and share so you and your friends won't miss our upcoming episodes. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Rumble, where we continue these discussions and share more valuable content. Be the dad you know you need to be, and run your business in a way you're proud to share with your kids. Keep crushing it.